Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. On this cool evening, it's about 1:50 in the morning. Just got off a huge project, so thanks for being patient with me. I've got one in the can, and this is another one. Plus, I need to make some sweet love to my Patreons through a custom video. Now, this video, which a lot of you could probably predict the overall subject matter, is partly for us to discuss this at a greater detail, like we always do. But the other half of this equation is to equip your mind, one, to not only avoid it yourself without being explicitly informed, but to also work with your family and friends, and perhaps your children, to make sure that they understand what's going on. Have you ever looked at someone or been the person who is extremely addicted to a drug? I mean, crack addict, cocaine addict, heroin addict, you have had or you have witnessed someone being just drunk on a particular addiction. In between the actual highs, they are crafting every move of their life get another hit, whether that be injecting themselves with something, sniffing, drinking, smoking, whatever it is. And you looked at that person, you're like, oh my gosh, whether you've been that person or not, if you've been that person, this may hit you even harder. But I think that there's wisdom in you if you have been addicted to that level before. If you have been addicted, you're going to know what I'm talking about more so than folks that haven't. But I think I've got something that we're going to equate to that addiction so that everyone gets it. Who would have thought that taking a surface and creating it out of light and simply controlling enough pixels of data, of color, on that surface, get this, starting off in black and white, is more than just two colors in black and white, but there's just, you know, maybe like truly with a phosphorus gun technology in the back of a television set, 10-bit color, 10-bit grayscale, maybe even 24-bit grayscale, but it's organically created. But who would have thought that we could blow glass, cover it in a layer of like sulfur, take a cathode ray and blast it in a pixelated fashion, painting it 60 times per second, and that would suddenly usurp your entire reality of the room that you're sitting in. But it starts way before that, doesn't it? Started way before that. We're basically talking about facsimiles of reality. Where did it start? What was one of the first facsimiles of reality that swept away our mind? Storytelling. Storytelling was the first one. I sit around a campfire. There is no technology in the entire world. We don't even have pigments that you can smear, you know, animal tails in and push it on a wall, push it on a canvas, push it on an object to create an image yet. I'm just orating to you. As long as you're just staring into a fire, staring up into the stars, you're going to start seeing an image inside your mind animate to the degree I can craft the story to you. To the degree I can craft a nice story of the beginning and a middle and an end and keep you concerned about the characters, excited about the characters. You're learning something about the story. As the characters mature through the story, you too mature sitting wherever you're sitting, lying wherever you're lying. If you share a similar experience with that character, you will start seeing your own memories imposed on that character. You'll start being that character. What was the next upgrade? Well, the next upgrade was almost like television, but in the world of painting. Dark lines on a light surface. Cave walls. Just organizing sand, organizing dirt with the fingertip of your hand. could paint a picture that could be understood, could give direction, could teach something, could just be something to pass time. But in itself, those images were reality. Serendipitously, I'm sure, we had situations where individuals used various things to paint. Maybe started off with some black sludge, some mud, but then it dried and it made the same color as the wall that it was painted on. Someone took some coal. Ah, now that stayed dark even after it dried. Must have been like magic to see wetness make something darker and then evaporate away. But eventually someone used a flower. Someone used a fruit. And they figured out there was something called pigments, even though they had no name for it. They had no knowledge of what the hell was going on. They just realized that these herbs, these organic structures, had color. Perhaps they might grind up a fine rock, but that was probably much harder to deal with because it wasn't essentially organic water-soluble matter. At first, they're just scribbling. Until their scribbles started to mimic pattern recognition within the minds of the humans looking at it, didn't recognize it as anything. It was probably abstract art. But once it started looking like the elk that they hunted, the bison that they hunted, the water buffalo that they hunted, once it started looking like their chief, the ladies in the village, the children running around, all of a sudden, people knew what the artist was trying to portray, at least in iconic form. As they were able to illustrate these icons in verbal stances, hunting, like the warrior of Orion, showing an animal that's completely healthy, and then an animal on the ground, and maybe they found some red pigment and painted it right at the arrow impact to signify that it had died and bled out. What's the difference in the power structure of these artists versus the life that they lived? Well, the life that you live is governed by the rules in physics and science / rules of God. You could only do what you can do. Now, perhaps we could do a lot more. We had faith in those other concepts. But today we adhere to all this closed-minded thinking. So we can no longer fly. We can no longer telepathically communicate with each other. So as we surrendered our power structure, as we became more human and less spiritual, we started to externalize what was inside our bodies and inside our minds, probably drawn out of the universe, to project it out in pixel form. Little tiny pixels of paint, coal, charcoal. I've told the story a few times, but one of the biggest methods that the Catholic Church used to forge its reality into the minds of the people, to convince the people of all of Europe, that Jesus Christ himself came down and gave the Pope the key to heaven, was to commission one of the best artists in the entire world to paint a photoreal painting of Jesus Christ giving the key to the Pope. Photoreal for the time, which was deemed illegal by the church unless they ordained the design of your painting first. Why? Because they realized that once the people saw something that looked photoreal, it became real in their mind, and there weren't to be anyone who was going to illustrate a reality that was going to go against the narrative of the church. Once the painting was put on display, they built a little annex building onto the side of the Vatican, and it was said by Sister Wendy, who had an amazing art appreciation story, I think she just recently passed. It was a series in the 90s on BBC. She said there was an 11-mile line on the first day to see this painting. It was just an L-shaped room. You walked in, saw it, and you exited to your right. 11 miles for months and months and months. Everyone wanted to see the evidence and the proof that indeed this claim that was the result of the Inquisition to force it into the minds of men was indeed real, and that person had given the authority to the Pope. Now, the person might have been very real. Might have been a very, very real, super spiritual son of God. But the church had to get control of that thing very quickly, didn't it? Because it was starting to lose control of the whole movement. But just remember that the church pounded it into the psyche of man for nearly 1,000 years. So they were pushing the story of this character by punishment of death using the first recorded mercenaries in history, an abstract legal group of people like a Blackwater group to go in and torture you and kill you. So, and then the church stood beside and said, hey, that wasn't us. That was them. We don't know why they did what they did, organized into three tranches of 300 years apiece, punishing them if they didn't believe the story. What was the next evolution? Well, the next evolution is actually fairly interesting and fairly intellectual, appreciated by few when it first debuted, but that was the printing press. A machine that could capture these pigments inside of a diagram, an image, something that someone carved in wood, perhaps. A way to typeset information. Not necessarily always in picture form, although even a crude picture had a profound effect on a group of people that had no methodology of carrying a photo with them. On average, it took centuries before man knew how to speak and write, read and write their own name, because what language would they have chosen to learn how to read and write? So for several hundreds of years after the printing press, that was the game. That was the game. Painting. Painting starts becoming mastered. By at least Michelangelo's day, you have an amazing moment where paintings are commissioned. Masters are everywhere. And the preceding, or sorry, the following centuries after him, oh my gosh, you can't even keep track of the masters, the Rembrandts, the Leonardos. Even though he didn't paint that much, he's got a pretty famous painting in the Louvre. But it keeps going, and it keeps going. And then a bunch of masterminds of electricity, starting in the 1800s, arrive. Finally, creating a product out of a bunch of electrical magnetic theories, really starting with the godfather of electricity, Faraday. They start building components to harness the power of electricity. Probably by a sheer accident, someone connected a wire, or a wire fell on a piece of paper. And when oscillated, it vibrated the piece of paper, wiggled it, made a little fizzle noise. And someone realized, my God, this is creating a vibration that, if harnessed through a bladder, known as a speaker, augmented by the placement of a magnet, could transfer a sound wave from point A to point B. It took him decades to perfect it, most of it using Nikola Tesla's patents to create a true logic circuit to be able to handle a device that could be powered on and powered off, to transport electricity over long distances, pioneered by the telegram technology, until one day someone transmitted a message. Marconi, right? Built out of a ton of Tesla's patent, the only regret Tesla had was he didn't transmit his voice and exhibition his creation. He simply kept working diligently on the components. But now imagine that day. Imagine that day when a near perfect facsimile of the human voice travels from point A to point B through this mysterious wire, of which most human beings on planet Earth, and we're talking 99.9% of human beings on Earth, had no knowledge of how electricity worked. Now all of a sudden they just take this contraption in their house, power it up, thread a wire, power up the other end, and all of a sudden you can hear my voice miles away. Telegram dies. It's kind of like the pager getting killed by the cell phone. We'll advance up a few more decades. Instead of everything being hotwired from point A to point B, Tesla contributes to the notion of broadcasting electricity through the air from point A to point B, antenna to antenna, tuned to the harmonics of the amplitude for the AM radio, amplitude modulation. All of a sudden now, you can hear whatever's happening on the other side. Now, there's a little one we skipped, which feeds into radio. But that was the first time that the orated stories between men became productions, the Greek theaters. Dressing in costume, writing a complex story, was stages. Understanding how to write story. Elaborate, long-term experiences, experience in an amphitheater, which has no electricity, so it has to be built acoustically sound. Actors have to shout. Makeup has to be very profound on the face because everyone's sitting a considerable distance from the characters. And that lasted all the way up until the talkie movie started. The camera resolution got much better. Now, at the same time, the telegram is blowing up, and the same time that the radio is coming online, photography was finally figured out and industrialized. Photography. What must it have been like for the average person to hold the first photograph in their hand, regardless of the resolution? But remember, the old negatives were gigantic. You think a Hasselblad negative's huge at 120. Ansel Adam negatives are gigantic, and there's even bigger ones than that. The resolution was off the chain. Imagine what it must have been like to look at a picture of something that if you really thought about your life, you may never, ever go to that location. In fact, you may cross it off your list because you think that the facsimile is good enough. The Grand Canyon. But you live in England. The idea of crossing the sea and trekking all the way to the Grand Canyon, perhaps before the train was completed. You wouldn't do it, but there, you got a little experience. Half a dozen decades into that one, we have movie cameras. We have movie cameras considerably faster than most evolutions of technology. A hand crank camera at first, averaging 5 to 10 frames per second, capturing people that are walking by. It all has to be, all the lighting has to be in the lens. I've seen the, movies from the 1800s and the 1898, right? One of the first movies ever publicly displayed was a movie where a train was coming into the train station, and it always came in really quick and it stopped perfectly before the end. And so they filmed that right at the very end, but the audience doesn't know it's going to stop. And so people would run out of the theater screaming because they thought the train was going to come bursting through the wall. Because the paradigm of a moving picture was reality. How brilliant were they who invented all of this technology to say that the senses of the mind rely so much on just two senses, your sight and your sound. You master those two, you're going to dominate most intellectual input from human beings. But it's one thing to create this new technology, this new medium. The other thing is to make it affordable so it can go into everyone's home. It's not just a rich kid's device. But why would they do that? Well, there are millions upon millions of dollars to be made from this business proposition. But when they realized that they could control the minds of human beings with this technology. Remember Orson Welles, War of the Worlds. That may have been an accident, but regardless, it showed the people who want to control society just a taste of its power. People running outside, screaming because they thought that the alien invasion was occurring because Orson Welles' team bought off all the advertisers. There was never to be a break in the show. It was as if someone commandeered the radio program to report the end of the world. By the 1930s and 40s and 50s, families just sat around radios, listening to their favorite programs. Beautifully acted out, beautiful sound effects. Now, for the rich people in the 40s, some people got televisions that early. Little tiny televisions. Not much on because the networks were still budding in the 40s. But by 1950, we had networks. They moved fast. Someone was paid to think things through. What's My Line debuted in 1950. Ran for 18 years. What's My Line is actually a great way for you to understand how developed television was, because you'll hear John Daly talk about the neighboring networks and neighboring television shows. And they will reference shows that were in the 40s. And so you get sort of a meter on how just evolved we were. The pixel. The true pixel on a television, run by a computer, wasn't made until the early 60s. Color television was only on RCA televisions. 1965, they lose the patent, and suddenly, we go from a two-color system, with the grayscale, up to full color. That's why Gilligan's Island was black and white at the beginning, and then turned to color later on. I'm just glad the Twilight Zones were completed by 1965, because the tonal quality of black and white, for me, is uncompared, which is why this show is in black and white in some regard. I've had this fascination with black and white my entire life. Movies. Movies start off as, in our minds, these silent movies with someone playing a piano off to the side. And we think, well, that probably didn't have much of an impact relative to the people of the time. It was just as profound as you going in and watching Avatar 22. It was mind-blowing. Once they figured out how to create a piece of film that had the soundtrack attached to the side of it, then we had the talkies. What's remarkable about early movies, and even early television shows, but really driven by the silver screen, in my opinion, is how quickly Hollywood was able to master the technology to create jaw-dropping movies so early. People don't know, in a lot of cases, that Wizard of Oz was created around 1936. The technology was on the floor to create a color movie in 1936. It took them 3 years to create that film. Kept going bankrupt. Gone with the Wind, same year, 1939. Mind-blowing color. I mean, they'll never do it again. They had a machine that had four reels of film, filming at the exact same second, splitting the lens with a prism, as I understand it. CMYK. Unbelievable, right? Cyan, yellow, magenta, and black and white. Mixed it together, and they had, you've seen the movie, right? It wasn't post-colorized. It is breathtaking. But look at the sets. Look at the concept of the story. Look at how gutsy that movie was. Flying monkey people, the wizard, complex characters like the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and a guy dressed up in a lion suit. Unbelievable. Of course, those of you who know the trivia of that film, you know the other complications that were there. The first silver makeup they put on the first actor, he inhaled it, and he had to be let go from the film, and he suffered permanent damage from inhaling that stuff. But movies, my gosh. Some made him black and white, because they couldn't afford to do it in color. It crafted our century right now, a lot of the content that came out of there. So why did I talk about drugs at the beginning of this thing? What the hell does that have to do with this episode? Unless you are a very special person, we are all addicted to pixel data. It doesn't matter how much you don't or do watch television. We have usually a movie that we love, that we cherish, that was part of our childhood. Maybe it's part of what you share with the family member or your entire family. Maybe it's a movie only you get, and you can almost never watch it with another human being. Maybe it's just a movie of your loved ones who have now passed on. A picture of you when you were a kid, before life got tough. Memories. Pixels are memories, right? No matter how you see a pixel, it's usually not live, unless you're watching some boring speech by a politician. And even at that point, it becomes history. Because the second you get done watching it, you can watch it again. It's a time machine. You know, there's been a lot of concerns about apocalyptic events occurring to complement the wonderful couple years that we've had. I think what is really misunderstood or not conceived of in a lot of cases is the impact of just losing our pixels, our pixel data. Imagine that. The only pixel data you can see post-apocalyptic, let's just say for a number of years, might just be analog things like paintings and pictures. How many of your pictures are printed out? We Jones for pixels, man. We want to see our favorite movies sequeled, as long as the original creators are still alive in most cases. But this is huge, and when you break it down, it's amazing how these pixels manipulate our mind. And I'll just give you a few examples that maybe you haven't abstracted your mind away from this. But this is what's important. When you see people addicted to their telephones, especially perhaps a spouse or a loved one, and you are too, you know, what is it? What is it technically? It's a grid of today, little LED packets of either RGB or RGBW, which is white. They're really high quality pixels. It's just a device. It's just a structure that you hold in your hand and you look into it, and it can completely control your chemistry in your mind without any suggestive frequencies, which it probably has embedded in as well. But just looking at just clean data on this telephone can make your blood pressure go up, can make you cry, can make you happy, can make you laugh. Think about a meme. You're looking at a meme on a telephone. It's funny. Whatever they said was next level funny. Someone showed you an image. Someone showed you a sentence or a couple words that is the contradictory complement to the image. Or maybe the congruent message of, yeah, that's that thing. That's that state of mind we're all making fun of at that moment. You're just looking at light on a camera. Light on a screen, I mean. If you haven't seen your loved one for a really long time, they live far away now. You get a live chat with them. They're moving on the other side. Got a pretty good sound system in your house. Nothing like the real thing. All of a sudden, you want to weep because you haven't seen them in a long time. You miss them. You're happy. Think about going to certain social media websites where all it's designed to do is convince people to feel intellectual by becoming really crafty and hating other people. I mean, they're the instigators, not just the repliers. They're the instigators. They woke up, they decided to insert symbols of language into this interface that then gets stored on a server and brought back up for you to see as you're scrolling with your thumb. And they communicate to you either an idea that you want to champion or an idea that makes you infuriated. And then you're trained like a little doggy to get in there and let them know what you feel. To double down. A little hate came your way. Well, you give them double hate the other way. And they're going to come back with triple hate. You come down with quadruple hate. You're being so manipulated, it's unbelievable. What dimension of your existence isn't being manipulated? They're controlling your mental state of mind. They're controlling your physiology, your blood pressure. They're inserting algorithms into your body that could truly cause cancer. Stress. But don't you think they know that? Don't you think they know that you might actually drop the drug and walk away? And so what do? They pay companies deliberately to make sure that you have some positive reinforcement with the technology as well. Not just the organic stuff, like perhaps me making a video and you like it. You making a tutorial video for me and I love that. Nope, there's companies out there that make little puppy dog videos and little kitty cat videos. There's professional networks that create funny content. They put it out there. For people looking at pornographic material, wow, geez, it's all free now. How the hell did they do that? How the hell did it go from $30 a month to free, 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 right? To reinforce you. That has a narrative that attaches to your body. If you're satisfying yourself at home, you're not making babies somewhere outside. That's their goal. That's why it's free. That will make sure you can see what you want to see. We don't even care how perverted you want to get because we're more perverted than you, they say. Pixels, man. That's all it is. Now, if one were to erase the pixel input and simply go with audio, well, there's a whole other realm that kind of snuck in there, right? Now, music has always been a part of a human culture. The second a man can make a sound, man created a rhythm. Once man could create a note, man created music. Music and rhythm is probably, quite frankly, the sound of the heart of the universe in some cases. I don't know why, but every time I sing in a dream, which doesn't happen very often, but when it happens, the melodies are truly angelic. Truly angelic. It's amazing. Well, I'm not governed by this reality, and for some reason, I'm never singing out of tune. I've never heard a bad song when I dream. But now think about whatever era you listened to music when it was wonderful for you. I was lucky that they weren't demonic songs when I was a kid. They were love songs and just having fun songs. Classical music brings on such amazing complex states of mind, depending on who you're listening to. You associate it with moments in your life because the melodies bring back the same chemical structure in your mind that are similar to live events that you actually experienced. Not just when you were playing the music and that experience happened as a Pavlovian trigger to that legacy memory, but things that you were doing with no classical music playing, but that the music still brings up that thought for you. Because it's harmonizing the inside of your body to mimic that moment. Now, they've always played music during silent movies and all the way up, right? You've heard those, you've seen a show on television where they're sort of reenacting the composition between a silent movie and a piano. And, you know, they'll play a tune. It's just Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin walking down the street, and the music's just ba-dum, 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 all major key stuff. It's all great. And then the cop turns the corner, and it goes into a minor key, and it's like dun-dun-dun. All that's the orchestration of your genetics, of your chemical structure in your mind. Your blood pressure goes up. Well, what's weird about it is you didn't have any of that stuff before you saw a movie. People in the world simply walk down the street and they would see a cop. And if they were a criminal, they'd have this weird feeling. But somehow, for people that were law-abiding citizens, they could go to a movie theater, watch a silent movie, and the piano would orchestrate the same emotions as the person in the movie was feeling. Isn't that fascinating? Within a decade, this started becoming mastered. Within 2 decades, it was utterly mastered. A sound score to a movie was perfectly matched for the time. Okay, now maybe it's not for you. You might listen to an old soundtrack from a 1940s movie, and for you, it doesn't manipulate you. It might sound cliche and silly, but for the people that were viewing it at the time, it was 100% on target most of the time. How many people watch, was it Forbidden Planet with a theremin soundtrack? Unbelievable. Same thing with The Day the Earth Stood Still. 2001 A Space Odyssey, rebranding a bunch of classical music to the point that when I grew up, I thought that was the soundtrack generated for the movie, but it was all a bunch of classical tunes that already existed. I learned Beethoven through Clockwork Orange because Stanley Kubrick not only picked Beethoven songs, but he put them in the right place. Minus the Lone Ranger soundtrack. Composed by Wendy Carlos, added another level of absolute uniqueness to it. And who would ever forget Star Wars? John Williams. Now, if you're older, you'll know Jaws, you'll know Close Encounters, but Star Wars. 3 movies with 3 masterful soundtracks. Not everything that John Williams did was his original creation, but come on. His composition and arrangement and performance of it, second to none, man. What soundtracks have come out after Star Wars for a movie that people were just absolutely overwhelmed by the music when it played in an empty room? Well, there's 1 or 2 songs out of certain movies, but nothing like that thing. A trilogy of perfection. But now remember what I said about the cell phone and essentially making sure that the internet doesn't lose all of its appeal. It has to have some anchors to keep you there. I mentioned the things that could keep you there. But there's no difference between the television, movies, and your cell phone, which is tantamount to your internet browser or anywhere on any device. There's a game of addiction. There's a game of addiction. Well, what is the cycle of an average drug? Well, you're jonesing for it. Maybe you haven't even taken the drug before or in a long time. But you hear or you know that that stuff makes you high. And right now you could really use maybe a little bit of relaxation from the stress because that particular drug makes you unwind. Maybe you need the energy boost. So you do a different drug. So you take the drug. Boy, it makes you feel amazing, doesn't it? And then there's the crash. Then there's the hangover. Then there's the withdrawals. And for whatever high you were able to achieve, you're not even sure how to measure the depths of hell that you go through the next day. In a lot of cases, in almost every single case, it's destroying your body. And the post-drug-taking era. For things like weed, well, you just got to be careful. Better have your life in order. Because it's going to soften your brain. For the temporary time that the drug is inside your body, it's going to make you slower. It's going to make you more tired on average, no matter what type you're smoking. I've experimented, trust me. But now, when we look at our reality today, how do they inject their will into the minds of men? How do they do it? Are people buying newspapers, man? Is it all word of mouth? Nah. Are they writing messages in the sky with those planes? Nah. We all know. There's four corporations that own it all. These people say five, but Reuters bought AP, so that's the fourth going, or the fifth going into the fourth. This depends how you arbitrarily divide it up, but those four own it all, man. Most of you have seen a compilation video of newscasters from around the world clear up to like 30 little boxes in one screen, all saying the same thing, the same cadence with the same emphasis on the syllable, because they got their talking orders. Specifically, they got it. They got told what to say. And they go out, and for a paycheck, they destroy reality. But let me ask you, because some people will minimize the power of this technology, not too many people, but they're afraid of it, and they don't want to admit that they're being manipulated by it. They don't want to wake up every day and think about the fact that if someone just writes a script and mails it out to the four corporations, to then mail it out to all their subsidiaries at the local, national, and international levels, that they could somehow make you believe something that isn't real. They don't want to believe that, and so they minimize it. They give you some weird interpretation of the data. And it's amazing how they do it. Let me ask you, has there ever been a time in history where those who control the world have so involuntarily been able to hand out a narrative and have the whole world believe it on average? No matter how sophisticated you thought your neighbors were, they still believed it. When it contradicts observable reality 1,000%. Now, let's think about 2020. They told you that there was a sickness out there that was taking a bunch of people out. Just killing off, oh my gosh, hundreds of millions of people. That's sort of how they made it sound, didn't they? What was really going on in the real world? What was really going on in the real world versus 2019? Well, technically speaking, around the world, especially the United States, we had a few tens of thousands of less people die in the United States in 2020 than they did in 2019. Except there's this big thing going around. The homeless people didn't seem to have any problems at all. And let me tell you, if you don't have homeless people where you live, come to Los Angeles and take a look. They're not dying off, they're multiplying. As the economy gets destroyed and people lose the ability to put a roof over their head. Never before imagining that they would ever be in that situation. And now a lot of them are coming up on their first year anniversary. They've been beat up, they've been raped. They've had all their items stolen. And if they weren't already down enough when they walked out for the first day to live on the street, it just became 100 times more difficult for them to climb out. And why did all that happen? I mean, why did we get the new additions to the team in the homeless realm? Well, let's just say, if all the people of the world lacked pixel power, lacked audio amplification of the pixel power, I think it's safe to estimate that if everyone just worked with observable reality, none of this would have happened. None of this would have happened. The psychosomatic spreading of a illness that had no symptoms would have never spread. Oh, sure, someone could drop a bioweapon and create some surges here and there, but without pixel power, that fraudulent moment wouldn't have manifested into another fraudulent moment. Right? A real bioweapon being dropped, say, in southern Italy would not have affected the rest of Italy. It would have simply had an effect at that location. And then perhaps we would have actually done the forensics research on the bodies instead of the army coming in, taking them really far away and burning them to ash and burying the ashes in some unknown location so the families have no evidence of what happened to their loved one. Erasing a burden on society called the retirement community. Nope. The last 2 years have been made possible by pixel power, I would say primarily, if not only. How much of your life stress that you have ever encountered was facilitated by pixel power? Meaning something awful happened in the world. It was filmed. It was broadcast to you. You saw it. And you vicariously lived through the event. Think about the day in September of 2001 here in America. If you hadn't seen it and you hadn't heard it, how would that story have ever come to you? It would have come to you through oral, dialogue and exchange. But how would they have described it to you? And how impactful would that moment have been for you? How much would you have rationalized going and attacking in a country as a result of it? Someone would fly from New York to LA. I mean, somehow we have planes, but we don't have the pixel power. But just go with me on this, right? Well, they would say something to the effect that we had these two tall buildings and a bunch of semi-tall buildings. And on one particular day, two giant 110-story buildings hit the ground. If they can remember Building 7, well, that one goes down too. Then you'd have to get someone flying from Washington, D.C. to your area. So they learned about the fourth building that was, injured. The impact of the entire event would have been so minuscule that those who orchestrated it would never have done it because the power it would hold over you would have been negligible. Sure, for those who saw it, well, they'd be scarred for life. Scarred for life. That's a given. But if it didn't create this overall panic within the United States of America and perhaps globally, no one would have changed the airport entry methodology. No one would have bought into this whole thing. But that's the power of the pixel, man. Music. I think most of you who are sort of on the more awake side of life, you understand that music was a joyous thing when it first came about. I mean, it got kids out there dancing and really exuding the energy that's been stuck inside them. You ever wonder why we create art in the first place? Why we create these fictional stories based a little bit on our true experiences, but augmented to the point of like superheroes and that sort of thing? And superheroes go all the way back to Greek gods and, think about the ancient Egyptian gods and Babylonian gods and Native American gods and all this kind of stuff. It's because we have this creative energy going through us constantly, probably because our conduit to the actual central intelligence of this place could be based a little bit on our previous experiences, could be based a little bit on the dream world that we live in before we become human in the first place. So when music got to a point where it was so mastered by humans, at least enough, that it could create, you know, Bach's Toccata and Fugue, Beethoven's Ninth, man, and then be metabolized into all these different movie scores. You know, the 50s, the 40s, the soothing 40s, the soothing 30s with all the beautiful instruments, but the, you know, there's the, you know, the boogaloo dancing and all this amazing stuff. The 20th century for music was off the chain in terms of the amazing, beautiful creations that were made up until about the 1990s. Songs were always meant to be inspirational, even if they were talking about losing a loved one, falling in love with something, getting their heart broken. It was the human condition that was being exhibitioned in music. The frequencies were one of survival and rebuilding and inspiration. Till the 90s happened. The 90s took a kind of a storytelling to a different level. Privileged, super rich white kids pretending that they're broke as a joke, pretend like they've had this horrible life, or starting to write this stuff that is super negative. Now, with a band, three-piece band, that's got a drummer, a bass player, and a guitar player, and a couple vocalists, let's just say. Well, they can use distortion pedals and what have you. And really, it's about the lyrics, the message. There was obviously a desire to expose the macabre nature of reality. Bands like NWA saying it's too much police brutality in southern Los Angeles, all orchestrated by the drug trade that was pushed upon them to break them apart. Then there's the more, you know, perhaps intellectual problems like Nirvana's Rape Me. Then you get like a Trent Reznor, a guy that uses synths to do his music, and boy, does he do it well. He got his heart broken, and he was utterly destroyed by this heartbreak to the point where he was able to create an entire album and mirror the voices in his synths to the excruciating pain and torment and three-dimensional existence of living in a heartbreak situation of betrayal into an album. Undeniably a masterpiece. First two albums were a masterpiece. I drifted off after that, so for me, he's definitely had wonderful songs after that point, but those first two were back-to-back amazing. Every once in a while, you get Lenny Kravitz in there, who's putting out some old-fashioned vibes from the 70s. But once we started generating all voices and songs out of synths, you gain a technology to get deeper and deeper into the psyche of man, mirrored with pixel power into what we call a video, instead of being a fun little video with perhaps a rat singing round and round with Milton Berle downstairs, dressed as both his husband and wife. You can start creating really intense experiences with symbology from the dark side. And that's what the 21st century is. You take all this super exorcist symbology and you wrap it up in shiny lacquered red paint. I don't remember what season I did it in, but I did this episode called The Physics of Symbology. And it has to do with how painting certain symbols into reality, a pentagram, what have you, any symbol of life, could either create a frequency of creation or a frequency of uncreation. We don't know. It is interesting that organizations seem to have their symbology delineated between the two of them. They don't use each other's symbology. For anyone who's taken a deep dive on how the pyramids might have created a harmonic hospital close by, misunderstood as a temple. Well, the way that that works is you lie down on a bed made of quartz, which will carry electrical signals beautifully into the body. It is electrified. All the bacteria in your body is shredded vibrations. Your body's fine. Your body's mass holds together. Vibrations that create life and it make your native DNA adhere to itself even stronger are pushed into your body while all the invaders are killed off. It might sound like you need a pyramid and a quartz bed to make that happen, but you don't. Couldn't the doctors at that time, if that story is indeed true, have put a bad frequency in your body that made the invaders in your body strengthen and you start to deteriorate? Music that is synth music has the power to resonate these frequencies beneath the music, but you still get it. If you wear a headset, which is like why there, I think there's companies like Beats out there that make sure that you ingest your music with the highest quality headset possible. Remember, the last phase of the covert program known as MKUltra, Mind Control Ultra, were sound waves into the ears of the patients instead of rape and torture to create the compartmentalized mind. Once they figured out they could do it with sound waves, they simply wrote down the equations that create these different sympathetic harmonics inside your brain. And they embedded right in your music. Coupled with pixel power, the state of your mind is so manipulated. It is as if the hand of the controller has reached inside that temporary apparition called your mind, which is the apparition that's generated between your body and your soul, and it can program that thing. And the more you ingest it, the more that algorithm seeds itself inside your mind structure, and perhaps even and on top of actually infecting the way your DNA portrays itself inside your body during replication. If you believe that you have a soul, well, what could happen if this stuff systemically leaked up into your soul? Could corrupt you as a being for your next life or beyond? Any of you have ever watched any of the Star Trek episodes between 1987 and I guess it's 2002? When Voyager concluded, or 2001 Voyager concluded. Yeah, it would have been just before Enterprise. There's the Borg. They really had a hard time keeping the Borg from destroying them at all times, right? This thing that Q took them to show them. Now, the storyline is not brand new with the Borg. But what was the single most powerful technique that they used to bring the Borg down? An infectious virus of individuality. A virus, a concept, a pattern that is spread instantaneously to all the DNA within the Borg, being the subjects of the Borg. Well, what if the game is to corrupt the whole tree of life? Using this mechanism, a much deeper game than you ever imagined. I think most of you know that before the pharmacological companies of the world took effect in the 1920s, the human DNA was fairly clean. I mean, probably as clean as God originally created it or evolution has evolved it. But now, they're injecting us with things from the moment we're born to corrupt that code. And in the past, in the recent past, it has only been of the subject that was injected with the modification that would be altered. We know as a result of 2020 and 2021, the game, whether or not they're successful or not, is to corrupt the babies that are born. Well, how much do you and I study that technology? And how much do they study it? They have spent above ground, I would say conservatively, $10 billion over the last 70 years studying this through programs like MKUltra. We did it in the United States, the Russians did it, and God knows what Europe did. But that's above ground spending. What might have happened below ground? Testing theories. Testing algorithms. I mean, there's two ways to do it. You have serendipitous discovery. Oh my gosh, did you see what just happened? What was on the meter of the sympathetic harmony system when that person started behaving that way. You know, they dial it back, roll back the video camera, look at the time index. Oh, it's this. Oh, well, that's one we got to save because that created a really wild experience. Let's research that. But the other methodology is just to do it by brute force. Get a bunch of human beings off the street and in a place where no one can see them again. And then literally conduct millions upon millions of experiments. Because within a single human being, I'm sure that you could sample 100,000 frequencies fairly accurately before perhaps the subject would deteriorate, die, maybe more. And then multiply that exponentially times the amount of human beings that you pull out of circulation to do these tests on. At some point, through sheer attrition, you're going to find generally every single state of mind that could be controlled. Every frequency of creation, every frequency of uncreation. Different devices would require different techniques. Televisions no longer have speakers in them a lot of times. The latest Sony televisions take the entire screen and turn it into a speaker. Utterly brilliant technology. Why Apple hasn't done that with the iMac, I don't know. My friend's television has no speakers. The screen is the speaker. Okay, so you do the average estimation of where the human beings are going to be in front of the TV. And you just make sure that there's a focal point where this sound's going to go and where the pixel light's going, because it's going to be seen by everyone in the room. The screens are slightly bent nowadays, a little concave. It's on a single plane of existence, so it's more like just a piece of paper kind of bent. It's not like a radar dish sliced or something. But that slight bend in the television starts to focus the sound waves very, very unified in front of the television. The average family obviously aligns the television with the seating area. It starts to complete the algorithm, the outreach program of insanity from these technologies, such that you get captured by them, literally. The movie Lookers from 1979 that my friend Richard Taylor worked on was all about this. 1979. They had developed a frequency. It's a fictional movie, probably based on some pretty decent technology. It was sort of predictive programming, if you ask me. But the television was able to emit a certain frequency. It was really all televisions, but they had figured out a frequency to broadcast into the room to paralyze everyone in the room. So that when the commercials play, they have to watch because they can't move and get up. Well, that technology doesn't technically exist that I know of. I mean, perhaps it exists, but it's not being used on us because someone would be standing in the kitchen, not paying attention to the television, and all of a sudden look at their family comatose for 2.5 minutes. That would reveal the algorithm. But they do use a little technique on you. They burst the volume during commercials, don't they? I remember by at least the late 80s, they had televisions that said that they would balance the audio coming out of the television. So if a movie was going up and down in volume, which is the case pretty much for all films made before 1975, horribly so, it would balance the audio. And yet I'm sitting here in late 2021, and none of that technology seems to work, does it? Why? Well, it removes the control apparatus. If nothing else, the advertisers probably complain to say, look, we were doing this on purpose to make sure people watch the ads that pays for your network. You're going to endorse the television? It's going to remove this algorithm? But it happens, doesn't it? It happens on online video services like the one you might be watching right now. If they're running ads, you won't see any on my show, though, of course. Any of you have played a video game? When you played it on a computer, like when I was a kid, you would play on like a 13-inch color television. Then it went to 15. Then it kept getting bigger and bigger and then wider aspect ratios. You knew that when you were looking into this game, whatever it is, there's a moment when the game turns off and you put yourself away and you're like, oh shit, I'm in a bedroom. I'm actually in this other reality. That's where I really exist. But when I was staring at this screen, that 16:9 aspect ratio flat screen monitor was my reality. It told me where I was. I was in this army suit. I was in this Fallout 4 thing. I was a complete superhero. The more that they destroy reality and make it horrible to wake up in that reality, and that's two different things, right? One, as long as what's in your television is vicariously more powerful than the life that you live, even though you might live a gifted life, that thing's still better. But let's say they're destroying the economy and you're unemployed and you're living off of your universal income. Well, man, that television is going to be way, way more powerful than anything that's going on in your life. Nothing else, you can at least look at your old movies that you like. But it really got profound to me, being in video games back in the day. I look at a tiny cell phone screen. Small little iPhone, man. The first iPhone screen was ridiculously teeny tiny. But by God, I could watch a little movie on that thing. And my brain was willing to surrender the overall peripheral vision of all the pixels that I saw. If I'm seeing, let's say, 50 million pixels on average, just looking out of my eyeballs, this little screen was a tiny single percentage of my visual range. And yet, somehow, because it was so perfectly portrayed on that screen, the rest of this reality melted away, even though it is the predominant reality that I live in. Probably because my mind wanted that reality to be my reality, that little tiny screen. Now, there was an evolution in pixel power in the 90s. Started in the 80s. Actually, it started technically in the late 70s, but it really got to cinematic quality by 1982. And you all know it. It's called CG. I've got a whole other video called CG Reality. So, special effects, sort of organically formed out of old Buck Rogers movies. Trip to the Moon. Kept getting more and more intense as science fiction was portraying these amazing events, and then horror movies got into the game. But the 1970s, when the Satanists were able to exhibition all of their belief systems through movies, and that's the decade they did it, it kept getting more and more intense. But there were limits. There were limits to what could be done in camera. They're very expensive. It always relied on a few people that would actually devote their life to such things. And so they needed something that was going to break through that barrier and offer no limitations except your imagination. Computer graphics debuted in the movie Tron, 1982. They went on to a bunch of other franchises, of course. By 1983, we had dinosaurs that never existed walking around in a kitchen, hunting human beings. What was it, 1982, right? We had T2, a cop made out of a synthetic metal. Amazing, right? I mean, these creations are nothing shy of a jaw-dropping accomplishment by mankind. The mathematics, the creativity, the tool-making, the artistry, all phenomenal accomplishments of man. As the layman uses it for creativity and enjoyable experiences, albeit maybe horrific, I should say. It kept going and going until the point where we now realize in the 21st century that one of the hidden games of this technology was to create what was in the movie Lookers. If you haven't seen Lookers, you gotta go get yourself a copy of it or go rent it somewhere. I can almost assure you you'll have to pay for it because it has a profound message in it. Now, in that movie, there was a volleyball scene, or it was kids playing a volleyball game. They endorsed some product. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was beer or something. Can't remember. And it was, in the movie, it was real actors that were portraying these sort of, but without a title, it was supposed to be like a computer-generated piece of artwork. And the director was essentially giving notes about this commercial to change the positions of the human beings. And they had like little, I think it was little special effects about the degree of the arm. They were basically doing hand animation of what we now do with mocap. 1979, people. Amazing. Well, we now have the deep fake. A whole nother dimension to the pixel power. From this point forward, you can't trust any pixels that you see I mean, you can use your spidey senses to see whether or not something's real, but I guarantee you there's not a single image within reason that can't be facsimiled in a computer, dropped down to low res, you know, that you imagine just having within these institutions that are bad organizations. They just have filters to say, okay, make it look like a low res iPhone 4 recording this on a low bandwidth streaming signal. And they'll add all the distortion to it, wiggle it to make it look like a human being is actually, you know, trying to survive an explosion. But it's really a giant 16:9 super 8K negative that's just being cannibalized down to a really small, crappy negative to make you believe that a human being filmed something live, inserting this whole thing. Now, if you're going to orchestrate a fake event, let's just say, well, they're not stupid anymore about where they lost their credibility, where they lost track of the facts, meaning literally the facts that contradict what you saw on television, say on September 2001, where planes didn't fly where they can possibly fly, the rotoscoping was off, or buildings in the background were in front of wings and that kind of stuff. They lost track of the facts because there was no way to disable all the devices that were going to film that day. With deep fake now, well, geez, there's 4 or 5 desktop software packages you can download for free and create fake human beings. Faces of people that look absolutely photoreal, and you can't tell the difference. You can't tell the difference. These people do not exist. There were some planes shot down north Ukraine a few years back, and they caught these locals were out there trying to look at the debris, and a guy shows up in a car and opens the back of his SUV, and he has this box full of fake IDs. These are pretty badly generated, but he starts throwing them out on the ground. It's all on video, man. And these guys grab the dude, and they're like, what the hell are you doing? And they grab these IDs out of this box, and they start filming them. And this dude's putting fake IDs all over the carcasses of the people who perished in that accident or that attack, right? All so they could blame the country to the north, having done this. Same script right out of Princess Bride, man. Where the little inconceivable guy again was tying that flag onto that horse to create a false situation. He said, this is a long and prestigious career. Wow. Hidden right in plain sight, man. Now, the one disadvantage that they currently have, which is going to be eclipsed shortly, and it's actually technically been eclipsed in the public sector, is this pixel power is going to get a lot more insane. A lot more insane. There's a few channels on YouTube that study machine learning. And there's one that I believe an Indian gentleman who's got a PhD in this, he does the comparative analysis between original footage, even from video games. Okay, this is disturbingly amazing. It is nothing shy of mind-blowingly amazing technology. It's technology that is so amazing that even myself, having grown up in computers from childhood, it seems near magic to me. And I know exactly how this stuff works in theory, but damn, it's amazing. So the problem that the bad folks have had is they can't find the top talent in the world to work for them. So they have limitations on how realistic they can make things look. The skills simply aren't there. Someone who is super skilled in CG has no need to go work for some clandestine bad group. They'd rather work in Hollywood and tell their girlfriend, I just made Top Gun. Think about that, or tell their boyfriend. But machine learning is going to fix that for the nefarious. There's an analysis of Grand Theft Auto. They took some footage. I mentioned this in one, I mentioned it in my CG reality video. But it's like, you know, it's the car driving around in Los Angeles, in Malibu. And it's pretty damn good, I have to say. I mean, they did a pretty amazing job. But you could tell it's not reality. You can just tell. Things are flat, grass is flat, people are a little weird the way they walk. Cars are okay, but not photoreal, you know? And they did an experiment where they took a bunch of data that was gathered for machine learning of driving around Germany. And they had this machine learning program go on top of the GTA footage and say, make it real. And not only was this made damn near photoreal, the shit ran real time, man. Real time. And that's what they needed on September 2001 to make that event flawless. But they didn't have the technology, so the facts slipped out. They're not going to have that problem anymore. They probably haven't had that problem for a long time. But they haven't planned a big event like that for a long time. But I assure you, the next one ain't going to have any problems. Not going to have any problems at all. Imagine having a president of your country that is truly 100% not real. Because machine learning would probably be about 2% stress level taking a character that is the general shape of the gentleman that ran for president. And live reillustrates the face, live resynthesizes the voice, and you have a fake president. You're never going to see him in your lifetime. His public appearances are all orchestrated in sets with actors. For all they know, they're at a movie. For all they know, they get kept so far away from the guy, they don't really notice he's not really the dude. Because as he speaks into the microphone, you hear the voice that you anticipate on hearing, even though the one that's going into the microphone isn't the one that's really happening. And when you look on the big jumbotron, well, sure, it looks like the guy, because that's immediately being reprocessed through by machine learning real time. You starting to get the picture? Who would have ever thought the television might need laws? Remember the story about the game show called Clue from the 1950s? Got super duper popular. This one dude starts winning all the time. I mean, crazy winning. Later, it was revealed that he was being fed the answers prior to the show starting, so he would pretend not to know. And when that story broke, this dude was known as the biggest traitor to society. It was just a game show, man. But people were so pissed off at this dude and the show for going along with this because the ratings were through the roof, right? Advertisers loved it. They passed a law saying no propaganda is allowed through the television set. Of course, it was not adhered to, although neophytes might believe so. It was later rejected in the 21st century because they needed that problem to be resolved, the legality and the liability of blatantly broadcasting propaganda on television. Again, this is not a big deal to you guys today. But in 2008, I went to a think tank in Los Angeles, pretty famous. I won't mention it. Its name anyway. And I met a bunch of really amazing people. And out of that, one of the individuals gave me his card. He was a friend of a friend. And he said, you got to come see this technology we're developing because you might be able to use it in your video games. And he was misunderstanding what kind of game company I had. But I had contacts at all the big carriers that could have used it. I walked into this place, I believe it was in Santa Monica. It was a really beautiful prime real estate office. Way too expensive for what they were selling. But they were trying to create an amazing environment for anyone who was a potential buyer. And I sat and watched this African tribesman on television talking perfectly, photorealistic, paint on his face, just crackled face. He was an older guy, very muscular. And then he flips the screen and it's an Asian girl with mocap dots on her face in another room. It wasn't happening live. They had to do a lot of finessing to it because machine learning wasn't in there to fill up all the holes. But that's long gone. But when I asked this guy, I said, you know, where did this technology come from? He said, well, you know, our CEO and our private, it was like CEO, CTO, and founder, one guy. And he said, well, he worked for maybe an agency with three letters. And that's where he developed this technology. And he's been given permission to bring it out into the private sector. Yeah, that's how that works, right? That's not allowed out until they have something way better. Then 10 years later, we get the first deep fakes coming out. People transforming into Tom Cruise. It's used to not only manipulate you into thinking certain things are real, but it's also used as an excuse for real things that they don't want you to believe. Man, is that amazing or what? A double-edged weapon. It can forge truth out of lies, and can forge lies out of truth. I don't think there's anything been more powerful than that in existence, because it is, to the layman, it is 100% effective. And for those of us who understand the technology, it becomes more and more difficult to discern whether or not you're seeing reality or not. The world has changed. It makes the finale of Escape from L.A., where Snake Plissken basically resets the entire world away from technology, sort of makes you think. Their plea to him at the last second of the film was, don't do it, man. You're going to send us back to the Stone Ages. And Snake just looks at the whole world as completely screwed, and he just goes, sounds a good idea to me. Bam! Does it. Now, do we want that? I don't think we want that. But we are too trusting as human beings, aren't we? We trust everything in this world until we are proven otherwise, but nowadays, the game has been upped. Yeah, it used to be your feelings got hurt, right? Maybe someone stole some money from you. Stole an opportunity from you. You can rebuild after something like that. Today, you trust that that meat you're eating is safe for you to eat. That drink you're drinking is safe for you to drink. The shampoo you're putting on your hair, the soap that you use to wash your body, the air that you breathe, the water you drink, you trust it, and you trust it, and you trust it. And you say, well, I know the ingredients of what's in this bottle because I read the label on the outside. I remember waking up, I believe it was like 1983, if I remember right, somewhere in there. I just moved back from Massachusetts. If I'm wrong, I was in Massachusetts, but I don't think I was. But there was a cyanide pill supposedly inserted inside a Tylenol pain relief bottle. And 2 to 3, 4 people supposedly got this cyanide pill. And then all of a sudden, this industry for putting special lids on everything arrived. And the interesting thing about it was the industry was ready on day one. It was as if all this technology had been invented overnight. Problem, reaction, solution. Industry invented. But we trust everything, don't we? We trust the television show we're watching is nothing more than a television show with funny writers on the outside. We trust that the music that has a melody that appeals to us is just music. That's all it is. Couldn't be any negative frequencies of sympathetic harmonies to zombify your brain and program you to love things that you otherwise wouldn't have anything to do with. Entrancing music, right? Remember trance music that came out of the 90s? Designed to literally put you in a state of suggestibility and then inject concepts into your mind. And they were going to be a huge delta from where you were, because that might reveal something. Nah, it's a slow cook. Slowly getting you addicted to more and more things in life. Making your morals seem out of date. You got too many of those rules in your life. Now, those old people that are happy and married and dying together with full-blown families to carry on their legacy. Now, they're fools, man. You should go the indie route, man. Screw all those people. You can get the same things they got not following any of the guidelines that they followed. Stick with me, kid. Everyone goes through a lone wolf stage. It's called the rite of passage. It's that mezzanine between your childhood and your early adulthood. You feel disjointed with reality. Things don't seem right. You're starting to gain your own private destiny, and you're starting to realize that you're encapsulated inside your parents' destiny. Maybe they match, but a lot of times they don't. And it only requires a few fractions of a percent difference from what your parents are doing for you to feel completely discombobulated with the world. When do you listen to music the most in your era of life? When you're young. It is your oasis. It was mine. Prince did it to me when I was a kid. I've said this story a couple of times on different shows, but it has a different point in this episode. I saw him on Saturday Night Live. It was the episode where the guy said the F-bomb and got himself fired. You can go watch that on YouTube. Next day, Prince drops two videos, Controversy and Sexuality. Well, Controversy has a bunch of concepts in it that are interesting. Am I black or white? Am I straight or gay? Next one was Sexuality. It was all about saying, screw all these rules with sexuality. It is Prince's identity to be sexual. Something he later walked away from when he joined the Jehovah's Witness in the 90s. But it was promiscuity. That was the trend of the 80s, right? Child pregnancies went through the absolute roof. Now, child pregnancies have always occurred, but they doubled, tripled, quadrupled, and kept going. Because that's what the music told us to do. I was lucky to have a bunch of good influencers around me, so that even as I was sort of breaking out of my mold and learning about all these options I had, I still had good grandmothers that I wouldn't do certain things in my life because I wouldn't want them to find out I did dumb things. My father, even though he's very liberal at home in terms of what I could do, what I could say around the house, when a woman entered the room, all that had to stop. You couldn't say dirty words. You couldn't talk about nasty things. Not that we wanted to, but if we slipped every once in a while, he would jump down your throat and say, when a lady's in the room, you act like a man. Or you go in your room and you go away and they have to go. Standards, man. All being eroded. I mean, honestly, now I've gone through my phase of pornography, trust me. I can't even imagine today being 15 years old and being in my home and having just, you know, infinite supply of pornography and doing something to that pornography by myself or with someone else, you know, and then going to visit my grandmother and eating lunch and staring at her in the face and just saying, oh man, you, in my brain going, you wouldn't even believe what I just saw. And that's so cool. Not a chance in hell, man. I think she could see into my soul and she'd know I'd be up to no good. So I wouldn't do that thing. But that's because I was raised in the past, not the present. And how many kids do that exact thing every day of their life? It is amazing the pixels that are worshipped online, isn't it? Websites that just have the most visceral, horrible stuff, brutal murders, or the most, I don't even know how to, I mean, I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but it's my personal opinion that some of the sexual things you'll see online, not even on sites that sell any of that stuff, but just sites that have videos that are crazy, you'll just see the demoralization of the entire society. Platforms that are basically teaching young girls how to be basically free prostitutes, man. Pixel power got them there. Music power got them there. Society is being harmonized as a whole into something I don't think that we really want to be a part of. My only hope is that society starts to notice and walk away from everything. And just say, look, that was the game of your generation, old man. The new generation, we're going to have some morals. We're going to live for something, stand for something. Not just all this woke crap. We're just going to be good human beings. But that's probably not in the cards unless something changes drastically. But as we get inundated with all this negativity and divide and conquer, hopefully, because the mind doesn't want to have anything to do with that. It really doesn't. The soul definitely doesn't have the capability of being a part of that. As Tony Robbins says, the mind navigates away from negativity. So place it where it deserves to be. Right? If you eat too much, place the negativity at this product that you think is making you feel better. All this chocolate you might eat because you've had a bad day. All this beer you drink because you've had a bad day. Place the negativity on those things instead of the state after consuming it. And your body will simply fix it. Your brain will fix the problem automatically as long as you can wholeheartedly, genuinely attach negativity to the wrong things, or to the right things, excuse me, the things that are wrong in your life. I look at Twitter and I say, oh my God, this is just nothing but pure evil 24/7. Good people are being lured into these satanic rituals of going up and spewing all this hatred. Something that shouldn't be a frequency that exists inside their body or soul or mind of any kind. And yet they do it every single day, thinking they're making change, man. Last case in point before I sign off. There's a channel on Telegram called SpaceShot76. And he has it open for everyone to post into. So you got a lot of tremendous amount of disinfo and repetition. If you deleted every duplicate post, it might have like 50 posts a day instead of 1,000. But there's this one person that goes up there. I believe it's a woman's name. And she will go into the channel once every day. And she'll just post something really nice in there. A kid seeing his dad after a long time, or a dog doing something cute. One of those anchoring situations. But in the end, she's injecting positivity into this otherwise extremely negative realm. It's interesting how it has such a delta on your mind. And if she wasn't posting that, you may be completely drunk on all the negativity and the acidic content that's in there, even though it might be truth. And once you know a particular piece of truth, do you need to have it told you every single day? Do you have to have your mommy call you every day and tell you what your name really is? No. You know your name. Done. Right? When someone teaches you something bad in the world and you know this truth, and you've done your research to confirm that you think it's truth, okay? It's done. You don't need it 100 times. That's why a lot of folks that give me videos all day long, they think they're doing me a service. And most of them are like 2 or 3 months, you know, behind the curve. I respect what they're trying to do because they're trying to pass the information around just in case I missed it. But in the end, they're taking, hey, here's a piece of darkness. You have it, right? There's that old joke. I can't remember what comedian was talking about it, but he said that when you walk down the street of, you know, whatever city you're in, and there's a dude passing out, you know, postcards for the local bar or local restaurant or strip club or whatever it is, and or a party that's going to happen in the area. What he's really saying is, here, you throw this away. That's the joke. And so that's a running joke with some of my friends here in HB. When you get junk content, here, you throw this away. In the case of injecting it in your mind, it's much more difficult to erase what you've seen, isn't it? So I hope this was a valuable exercise. This is not only for us as individuals, but it is for our friends and family that might be extremely addicted to this. You can't just walk up to them and say, why are you always on your phone? You're right in asking that question, but without a little bit of buildup and metadata and understanding of its foundational anchor on the mind. This didn't start the day the phone was invented with a screen on it. This has been around for every single human being that is alive today to hear my voice. I don't care if you're 110 years old. The technology has existed since you were born. The younger that you are, the more you are utterly compromised. You are addicted to a drug, and you will fight for it, and you will kill for it, and you will do whatever it takes to get your next hit. But none of us should be striving for any of it, because it simply is destroying society. It is molding society at a speed that society has never, ever been controlled before. Think it over, man. Tell me what you think. And if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. Everything's there. Audio, video, social media, all new remastered season 1. The store with some fun shirts. Thank you for all those who have been purchasing them lately. And for those of you who contribute to the channel through PayPal and Patreon, thank you so much. I apologize for the delay in the episodes, which you may or may not believe that's the case. For me, I feel like I haven't recorded in a while. And until next time, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. I think most of you know that prior to the you can take some pretty basic footage. And to back up for 1 second, the weakness, go back to the beginning of that. Everybody goes through a lone wolf stage, easy for me to say.